Hey everybody, Adam here with a quick programming note. What you're about to hear is the end of that big marathon finale recording session where we recorded our after show. There's actually one of these for every show we've done other, I think, than the very, very first episode zero where we played Psyonix. But this one's a little longer on account of it being the finale, but we figured kind of what better way to celebrate wrapping up this epic campaign than by sharing this little peek behind the scenes with our regular listeners. If you like what you hear here, there's more of that if you want to jump in on our Patreon. And if not, we really appreciate you sticking through it. We hope you enjoy this little conversation. There's less editing on these, so there's a little bit more just kind of like table noise. It's a little more chatty and casual. And, you know, we tend to be a little punchy by the end of our recording sessions, and none more so than this one. So, you know, if this is an energy that you like or it has information that you're interested in, check out the others. Otherwise, we'll see you in not too long from when this goes live for a sort of whole campaign retrospective that we recorded a little ways after this big recording session where we did our finale. We hope you have enjoyed listening. We hope you continue to enjoy listening, and we're excited to share this with you.
For the peaks, we're doing Seabat. Adam does not know what this is.
I was not prepared.
Oh, way to bring that back.
Bless you.
Fucking 10 hours later.
Seabat, for Adam and for any listeners, is a both rhythmically and melodically wonky piece of electronic music that became a bit of a meme on Reddit, probably elsewhere on the internet, after someone posted that it was the perfect music to have sex to. Which it is not. I mean, whatever. I mean, go with God if that's your thing. But I think it was, you know, and I don't think anybody was passionately arguing that point. It was mostly a joke.
Did it start as Am I the Asshole?
Did it? Oh, it might have. That's totally possible.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
I...
yeah, that particular corner of Reddit. Yeah.
Well, this is weird energy to start the peaks on. Welcome to the peaks. I applaud the callback because, yeah, it has been very nearly 10 hours since we first convened.
That was a punchline that you, dear listener, almost certainly did not hear the setup for.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is the kind of thing that you presumably come to these peaks for, as we continually do it over and over again. So how else to end than as we began and indeed went on? Welcome to... Now, this peaks is going to cover what likely to you, listener, were episodes 54 and 55, which were recorded in one marathon session. You know, that we set aside to do. I believe the plan is to make these peaks publicly available as well, you know, as a sort of end of campaign gift to our non-Patreon listeners. Though I'll take this opportunity to say to our patrons, thank you. Here we are at the end of a 55 episode campaign with some one shots and things sprinkled in. You know, it's been a ride already, and I'm excited to do the next stuff too. So, you know, we thank you, our non-patron listeners. Thank you for keeping this thing going.
Yeah, hear, hear. Thank you. Welcome those who would not normally hear the peaks. Hopefully you enjoy it, and hopefully you consider joining us if you're able and if you'd like to. And yeah, I mean, I've said it before, dear supporters, we objectively love you more. So thanks.
It is a repeated refrain. We do love you more.
We do.
But we love all of our listeners.
Indeed. There's lots of love to go around, which was sort of a theme of our finale, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. Like, there were all sorts of punches it didn't pull. I found the temptation section to be pretty gut punchy. Mm-hmm. That shit got me pretty good.
You know, now that the campaign is over, so we are planning to have sort of our next regular episode out be sort of a campaign retrospective. So, you know, we'll get into like the big picture stuff more there. But, you know, I can kind of be very open now that, you know, this campaign has wrapped. The sort of, you know, tempting worlds, like I was under no illusions that those were going to be successful. Obviously, that's not the story we were telling. Not what anybody wanted to do. But I kind of made the executive decision that whatever it is that underlies that phenomenon, that force, is petty. Mm-hmm. And if it couldn't convince you, it just wanted to hurt you.
Yeah. No, that came across. Oh, that came across. And it made total sense that, like, it isn't this unknowable.
You gave someone not quite Thad Dusk's voice. I'm just like, fuck you for that, sir.
Yeah, totally.
And so on the one hand, right, it made it in some ways easy to just be like, well, fuck off with that. But on the other hand, you know, the goal is that as, you know, in character, it would be like that much like more impactful and rougher a thing.
A hard experience, if not a hard decision. Right.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, well said.
Well, you even did something different with Varric's voice, which was like, I'm assuming you did something different with Varric's voice in that moment where it was not quite right.
It's interesting because it is down to not me going, oh, I'm going to do this subtly different thing with Varric's voice, but he was just saying things in ways that Varric doesn't usually, and that was enough to sort of, you know, pull it in a direction in terms of the voice. That and the length of the recording session, I'm sure, factored in as well.
But, it was well done.
Yeah, all of those sequences were perfectly off in a really solid way.
I'm glad. Yeah, I was trying to make it, you know, appropriately climactic, even when there was not really that much like doubt as to how things were going to shake out, right? Because you had gone in with the decision made for quite a while, which, yeah, I think was.
I think for more than a year by this point.
I didn't expect any of us to waver. Yeah. If anything, I expected maybe not all of us to get that far. Because, you know, I didn't think it was a given that we were all going to survive the fight.
Same.
The big fight.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't. And this maybe will end up being my low. I had put Cirtha in the position that Cirtha was in specifically so that it was available as a rug pull that you could do to Celiant. She didn't know Cirtha was still alive. You know, so had it gone that way, you know, I had set this up for a while, right? All the way back to running into Ekkat in Fermata, where he was sort of like trapped there. That had been kind of the plan, that Cirtha could be an out if Celiand was like, aha, now I'm the last Imperator and I shall become the Overgod. Crickets, because she doesn't know Cirtha's still there. So I needed to tie that off, and certainly the way that it was going was towards hostilities, though it ended up being maybe not quite as...
I found it extremely personally satisfying.
Well, good.
Because I got to finally just, like, use their chancel in the way that they had tried to fuck around with ours, and, like, middle fingers them all the way. Because I personally bear the Cirthans a great deal of ill will.
Right. I didn't think it was like bad or wrong the way that it went, but I was sort of like, this feels a little tacked in. But I felt like it needed to be dispensed with since I had laid all the track that didn't end up actually being necessary.
I liked it a lot personally. It did feel like tying off a loose end, sure, but it was also like the part of the reason that it felt so right for the Overgod or the force behind it or whatever to be petty, and part of the reason it felt so good to, like, you know, have to, like, tell the Cirthans to fuck off, was that, like, the final boss battle isn't the point of this campaign. It was extremely satisfying, and the fact that it happened, like, wordlessly, diegetically, and that it was kind of, like, nasty was great, but that isn't the climax, right? So, like, the fact that there was social stuff, and the fact that there was, you know, whether or not any of us were ever going to break, which I don't think we were, the fact that our characters had to overcome that, to me, that felt really right. I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked it a lot because it got it felt like if we had not gotten a little bit more of Sirtha or figured out what was going on with Sirtha by the end, it would have been one of those things that came up in our post-mortem episode. Mm. Like, I would have had so many questions about it. I adore the on-off switch that they seem to have.
That was such a nice touch.
I love that. I have no idea why they have that, but oh my god, it's kind of incredible.
Here's the thing. They don't know why they have that either.
Why do we even have that button?
Yeah, and the only entity that could have answered was Sirtha, who clearly never gave them an answer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Sirtha was in the campaign for at all is like a very authoritarian but relatively like
aloof,
relatably human kind of imperator. Aloof, certainly, but aloof in the way that like the Chinese emperors were aloof, right?
Sure.
Not like inhuman, you know, in quite such a way.
You know, like our boss, our initial boss.
Or the deep. Dagoom.
Yeah. It was interesting because...
Did we ever have a direct conversation with Dagoom other than, bitch, we're better than you?
Here's a fun little thing, too. You couldn't have. Dagoom just does not communicate verbally. that was a thing I thought was maybe going to happen earlier in the campaign. But by the time we got to all of this, even, you know, like where we were leading up to you guys going to Tintern, I was like, okay, well, this is, you know, Dagoom is essentially prey for Celiand unless somebody does something about it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Which we didn't, and which, oops.
Well, that relates back to the inception of the idea for this campaign being partially down to the Dominions franchise.
Yep.
Because your god can just be a big fish that is big enough
or
to be
a big godly. Rock.
Or a big rock.
End of the game.
Yeah. So that was kind of where Dagoom was, you know, in the constellation of things going on in all of this.
I think maybe my high was just like, I feel like the group was really jiving and really kind of vibing with like with the, just the way that some of the dialogue flowed. And like we've talked a lot about how much we've learned about pacing throughout this campaign. There were just some really good moments in this, I think. Always for the listener to decide, but it felt really good while we were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think my high was going up the moon road, middle fingers bared at the Seraphins. Not gonna lie.
Doing a wheelie in the parking lot.
Giving him a swirly the whole way up.
Because
nice Apian way. It's mine now, nerds.
Like, they were so friggin' rude to me during the entirety of their stay. Mm-hmm. And just, bitch, I'm better than you.
If we didn't need the moon, it would have been fun just to flip that switch multiple times out of sheer pettiness. I think that's like a, not quite a low, but a thought that I just had that I was like, darn. Missed opportunity to push every button
else.
On the elevator.
Yeah, totally. Well, there were just like little moments of us goofing off that gestured at the way these characters had come to enjoy being goblins together that I thought was like also really important as part of like a conclusion.
Mm-hmm. And I actually got to use each part of my portfolio as like we concluded this whole thing. I think everyone got to, basically.
Yeah, my use of revelry was a little forced. That might be my low. I wish I'd found a more direct way to use revelry. I was thinking maybe being bad guests with the Sirthans, there was something there, but like that resolved a different way. It's not a huge deal, but yeah, that was one thing I wish I'd tied off a little more cleanly.
Also, it was pretty cool, and thank you everyone for cooperating with me, just going, oh yeah, I'm a world walker. We're going this way.
I mean, look, that was the goal. Fuck the Sirthans. Mm-hmm. It just made sense.
Yeah.
I did not get to use the forge, but the important thing is that I got the forge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the use of the forge was it appearing in this episode.
Yes.
My estimation.
I think Milo is probably declaring the murder on an assumption that it would be a one-round combat. I don't really think we've had terribly many multi-round combats in this.
Murders can be campaign. Long.
Oh, I know. This was a bit drawn out.
This was ran into my knife multiple times.
10 times. She ran into.
Yeah, well,
she ran into my bloodstone 10 times.
Whoops.
Yeah, and on that note, I had kind of put the Celiand fight together in terms of like sort of her state and stats ahead of some of the stuff that you guys had thought to do, like before we concluded in 53. And so you rolled in and we're basically going to stomp her given enough time and taking some to enough damage. It really just became like, did you try to, you know, talk to her in any way first, and how did she respond?
What would have happened there?
I mean, I don't think anything dramatically different. She just would have been
petty at us.
Well, in a particularly unhinged way, thanks to Lissa's efforts.
That could have been fun.
Well, that could have been fun.
Yeah, that could have been interesting. But
the Sirtha thing also could have. Right. And the Sirtha thing could have come into play in a more sort of direct way during that.
And but I didn't expect you to talk to her. You guys have been really itching to put paid to Celiand for a while, which I understand and take some pride in. But
maybe taking off her earrings and handing them to us.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I didn't really expect you to go in with even a perfunctory conversation necessarily, but it was on the table. And so it was just a matter of what did you end up committing to the fight?
Did she start with pain?
Yeah.
Or did she take that from someone?
She started with pain. Oh. She started with beauty, truth, sacrifice, pain, and betrayal.
Cool. That's right. Ooh. I do remember that portfolio. Hell of a portfolio.
I don't remember pain having been mentioned as part of that.
It wasn't.
Yeah. That was a surprise.
It was, yeah.
Were all of those others mentioned? I feel like.
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah, pain was
beauty,
the only.
Truth. Yeah. Beauty, truth, and sacrifice were her names.
Sacrifice, or excuse me, betrayal and pain were the surprises.
That's right.
But
that's right.
As much as I wanted, like, kind of thought that was going to be my earnest low, was not giving her a chance to talk or show the influence of that 17-point miracle. The miracles that I had sent in her direction, but at the same token, having her just cut off from the force that was very satisfying.
Well, and like, to be clear, I know it didn't end up being showy, but the miracles that you channeled all that power into had two primary effects in the way that the session went. One, she was purely reactive, basically waiting for you to come to her at that point, right? Like she you had rendered her essentially on standby unless you gave her enough time to recover, which would have been probably on the order of days at that point. And not being super smart in combat, right? She was basically just lashing out however she kind of saw to do when you went to fight her. Like,
what was it that was sort of going on with her being suffuse in Fermata? Was that like
reconstituting
an obfuscation relative to being in the manifestation or in the heart of the manifestation, or like something to do with Adleova doing her thing?
So Celiand had gotten some of the bits of Mott. And so, deprived of Tintern, she was in the process of trying to claim Fermata as a chancel for herself to protect herself. You know? And
I show up and trivially end all the murders.
Indeed. I didn't think she was ever going to really get an opportunity to like make it work. Because Adleova did have a crowd for the size of building she was in, but not 100 people, and had not fully convinced them to die for anything just yet. You know, like, mm-hmm. she was working overtime to try and make it happen, but you all would have had to really mosey for Celia yep. to be able to re-enchancel. That was not something I thought was likely to happen, but it made sense as her next move.
Of course, yeah.
Secondary high, I think, was since this is two sessions, basically, right. was just, no, Beauty, you're done. Go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I love the payoff of getting to see her actual face, too.
Yeah, that was
really well done, yeah.
I'm glad, yeah. I had kind of had that in mind from realizing that if you got truth in 10 turn, you could use it against Beauty. I kind of started to develop
it's been on my brain for a bit.
We had discussed that offline.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting because one of my things for this recording session, these two episodes, was that what I wanted to do was reward you spending miracle points. You know, mm-hmm. so if in the middle of the campaign I would have tried to kind of hedge so that I kind of had the tools at my belt, you know, or be like, well, you would have to do this. I was okay giving dramatic effects to more basic miracles, allowing the miracle points to be a little more fungible, because if you're willing to commit the power to it, this is the time for it to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it paid off reasonably well, although
mm-hmm. oh, for sure
my high is extremely so you know how there are the writing advice is kill your darlings. I'm bad at that. A while
it's shit
back
advice
now,
depending on how it's interpreted too, so
sure. But a while back now, I had wrote into sort of my little notes on my phone the description of the world after you succeeded. I wrote it down. I literally typed it into my phone before work at like 6 a.m. sitting at my desk, you know, just like kind of happened to think of it. Wrote it down, read over it a dozen or more times since then, ran it by Joanne to workshop it, didn't change a damn thing any of those times.
Nice.
And then read it almost word for word when you came out of the Godswoods. And you know what? I don't know how it worked overall, but I really liked it. So that's my high.
I liked it a whole lot.
It was very good. I in character was sad that Dusk was not in evidence. I suspect that Den will be a little bit disappointed as well. And, you know, they may have to deal with art that deals with me and Thad, which means that no. Robin will have to deal with Thad for forever.
But my interpretation of Dost not being present wasn't necessarily that was an end to all things, just that there's always like the inkling for a continuation of a story, and I think the continued search for Dusk is where that
I goes. Mean that's certainly Rumnet's post epilogue.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and my intent for it is that everybody who listens can have their own decision about whether or not, you know, they want Dusk to have made the transition or not. You know,
I actually deleted a portion from mine after realizing mm-hmm. that everyone else's was going to be very short, and mentioned that occasionally after the Forg moved, it said that a stranger would visit the site, look around in a disarray, and then shuffle off into the distance. They find this remarkable only because he was wearing a single glove. But yeah. I realize I'm just it's too long, and that kind of takes it wouldn't have flowed as like in the way
that
it did.
That I think was a good story detail to not declare.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. That rocks terms. In its perfect peaks fodder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I love that you wrote it, but I also really love that yeah, it is open to interpretation. That you know, Dusk could really be gone, or could be in some form that is not yet understandable, or could come back. Could be mortal again and just have flaked so hard that no one can find him. All of these things are possible.
All right, one possibility that I hadn't considered is that Dask is alive on the moon. just sitting
also,
up there on the moon.
Also,
like,
It likely...
1969 rolls around. Astronauts come back. Moon's haunted.
Always has been. But it also, like... delightfully to the way I'd written the character before Drew and I took one look at each other in the first episode and, you know, that's history. Like a return to Romnet just kind of being not loose, but open with his affection. To any who would be interested in receiving it, really. And thus, more succinctly, as I put it in the time between finishing the session and starting the peaks, Romnet's got hoes in each zip code.
That's the conversation I returned to.
Yes, yes.
That's the one.
Yeah. See, I circled back for you.
Thank you. I
like the, if we're doing the facetious continuity, that this somehow leads into our historical Earth timeline, like with 1969 and astronauts finding Dask's ghost on the moon. I like the idea that zip codes actually get based on where Romnet's liaisons were.
I'm delighted in this. yeah. Well, you've all heard it here.
Romnet was so prodigious that they had to invent the zipper for him, hence zip code.
That's not a Dask fact.
It's not a Dask fact. It's no kind of fact.
So here's a thing that I hadn't really thought about in a minute that I kind of regret how I executed it. And I guess this might belong in next episode's more campaign retrospective stuff, but mention of Dask's distinctive fashion sense made me realize that by having him be embodied as nothing, we lost that incredible detail for the remainder of the campaign, and I am now sad.
There is an irony to that, which I think is a little bit fitting with the whole ascension and greater power, and none of it really being what he wanted.
Right.
No one else was envisioning like the old Taco Bell sketchy but brightly colored aesthetic whenever they were thinking.
I was kind of thinking of like the Take On Me music video.
Yes.
Sketchy.
Yeah, I get that. That's closer.
Which
to what
very
was in
leaves
my head.
It open to like late 80s, early 90s, like Winn-Dixie coloring.
Yes.
Or Dixie cup coloring, rather.
That's interesting. What I was picturing was almost like a piece of extremely black construction paper on a piece of pretty black construction paper.
It's interesting. I mostly pictured Dask's voids as white rather than black.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Mine were mostly white too, but with like the Taco Bell aesthetic, I guess, elsewhere.
Well, when I described him as sketched in, I was mostly picturing him as like kind of charcoal or graphite, you know, just kind of like gesture drawing. But, you know, there's
I for sure pictured that when you first said it, and then it settled into the black on black thing in my head at some point for some reason.
And that's perfectly within canon for the descriptions I gave, you know.
No, I like that it's a contrast to Mott, you know, like that it's something other than darkness or silver. That's very
cool.
That was like, kind of my initial idea too, is that Dask's nothing is different than Mott's nothing.
Right. No, and when you and I were talking about Boar originally, that was definitely part of the idea, was it is an empty but kind of like brightly lit, you know, not a sunless place, literally or figuratively.
So my high is just how damn proud I am of us.
Shucks.
It's been an absolute privilege. You guys are awesome. But I also, the whole damn episodes realistically would have been my high. But I would be remiss if I did not dwell on the fact that we are 55 episodes into this thing that at least had its inception during the like corn times. I couldn't find the exact start date where we sat down to record the first episode, but it's been well over 2 years.
It was sometime wintery.
Pardon?
like fall, I want to say, like October-ish.
Yeah, like fall, late summer. And yeah, like I was thinking the other day, like it's crazy to me how different my life looks, and I'm sure it's the same for everyone here. To contemplate how long we've consistently been showing up for this as everything changed around us.
It's been a weird, beautiful constant. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this has been a delightful constant, particularly since, you know, a lot of my social life is prosecuted digitally, and this has become a central corner to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here,
here. Cornerstone, even.
Yeah. I started off as depressed post-pandemic, well, not truly post-pandemic, but post-quarantines single, and now I am suddenly spending 6 hours in the gym weekly and in a 2-year-long relationship and pre-engaged. So, like, crazy changes.
Yeah. We haven't mentioned this on air, so I'll say on air, mazel tov. That's the best.
Indeed.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah, tis exciting. And yeah, I think the scope of the thing really came into sharp focus in that we are currently in like hour 11 since convening. Like it
took
all this to wrap up, you know, even on the precipice of it, right? It's a big thing that took a long time and over a long time frame, but I you know we're in a lot of ways
we built an edifice.
Yeah.
And then we tore it down.
It's been 11 hours, but it hasn't felt anywhere close to that.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. Not at all. No, and it's like, you know, I think we said something like this in a previous Peaks, but most podcasts fall off well before this. Most campaigns kind of don't reach
fall
this
apart
point.
Well before this. And most campaigns don't finish.
And exactly. And most forms of serialized storytelling don't come together in anything like this cohesive a way. So I think it's fair for us to pat ourselves and each other on the back a little on that score.
Yeah.
This was a cool thing to wrap up and put a bow on for sure.
Well, and I'll go the next step there, as I think it's something to be proud of, and I appreciate, Robin, you making that your high. I also feel like I just learned a ton. I mean, you know, we went from recording and editing in Audacity with a lot of the problems that caused me, specifically given how Audacity doesn't really run very well on my computer for some reason. To you know getting more and more facility with the tools available in Reaper and you know upgrading some equipment and but also like we had mentioned getting better at pacing earlier and you know sort of just you know I have improved.
We tied in so many things
in
this session, some of them from actual years ago,
right.
Literal.
Mm-hmm. Genuinely, so as a sidebar to my larger point, I believe it came up on air. It certainly came up in the little chat bar on the side here as well. That Lissa specifically would have been reminded of like the first entity, you know, they encounter on their first little mission into the swamp in like first and second episode when confronted with the temptations of the throne and I was the Lycoris recoil react gif of Takeda going yes running in place. I was like, yes, I did it. It read.
Like, yep, it really did. It almost started
call
off
back success.
The same. The only difference being is that Lissa herself was not changed in the vision, but enough of the parts were there that it very much came across.
Yeah, and like, you know, the phenomenon behind the temptation wouldn't have the knowledge that we have about that, you know, already not having worked, right? I felt like that was something that, you know, displayed its just kind of mean pettiness, you know, just wanted to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was both for like narrative drama and climactic feeling, but also because so for a game I have not played, I will be very, very vague here, lest anybody need it not to be spoiled. But for a game I have not played, the climax to Night in the Woods exerts a strong hold over my imagination. You know, if you haven't, may I suggest looking into Night in the Woods? But
I think I have it, but I never finished it. That's a good reason for me to pick it up again.
Real good game, and the turn you're describing is real effective and real lives in my head too, for sure. And I have played the game, to be clear.
And so that is some of the kind of thematic thunder I was stealing there, I guess.
The idea that at the top there isn't something august or unknowable, but something petty. Like, I can't stop thinking about that. That's so true, right? Like, on the metaphor that we were sort of weaving, and it just feels extremely on.
Well, like, not to take us into both digressive and consternating places, but like, in a world where somebody like Elon Musk can be the richest person and at the top of the food chain of the dominant economic system of the dominant country in the world, having the throne be petty and mean feels
appropriate.
Like, it's not accurate. Disconnected from reality.
this is like the only canonical through line between this campaign and Meat Punks, as we've already alluded to the existence of an Elon Musk equivalent in that setting. So more on that later.
I always thought that Elon Musk, at least his eyes, looked something like a void.
There's certainly nothing going on behind him.
That just, you know, was kind of, it wasn't where I started out in episode one necessarily taking it, but certainly by the time we got to this point, you know, having the with you all having set your goals as you had, it made sense for, I didn't think I could make something tempting enough with my imagination for your characters to really consider, you know, stepping into the position of over God. So instead, I decided to take the opportunity to characterize the motive force behind the system that had
God. Romnet would have been so sad. because I think more than anyone except, well, no, differently from the rest of them, no more, thrives on close connection. Like, I think Adam a little bit had a bit of trouble placing me into the epilogue because my connections were all to people rather than places or events.
I will generalize that, actually, to the part of these two episodes that I was shakiest on was definitely trying to describe how both the offered temptation and kind of the warm epilogue, like, fit with the priorities, values, characterizations, motivations of each character from where I'm sitting in a way that would read well to the players and to the listeners. And because I was withholding Dosk's presence into sort of the post epilogue as an unknown, I gave myself an even bigger challenge where Romnet was concerned. But yeah, I hope it worked.
I did really like the decision to not include any of the extant party. Like, the exception I alluded to in the side chat was Dosk, was the only one that had been a player character or part of the family that went to the void, that appeared in any of our worlds, I guess.
I sort of loved that, even though, you know, petty as whatever that force was, It either couldn't or didn't think to lie about that, you know, didn't think that it could tempt us with a a lie where we could all be together, or wasn't capable of weaving that, or like didn't think that's what we wanted. Like that was such a nice touch.
My thing is that like I kind of, you know, the admission I'll make is I kind of stumbled bass ackward into that pattern, but because the whole kind of central organizing principle of the throne is that it is, you know,
a single seater
solipsistic kind of thing, right? You know, it's not the sort of thing that would appeal to the sort of person whose connections to others were strong, right? Like it's not in the nature of the position or of the force behind it to value those connections. You know, and I guess my persona influences are showing now, but you know, I don't have a personality or an identity or a consciousness behind it, really, you know, in like the deep lore of the campaign. But whatever is making the decisions or putting together the things that it was showing you, right, can't conceive, you know, of the people around the temptee as anything other than props.
For competition.
Yeah. That was like the those things would unfold, but we would not experience them, really underscore that. Also reminded me of a show called Continuum that had that kind of gut punch effect of the ending, where everything that had been, like, the character had been pushing towards comes to fruition, but it's not hers. Spoilers. It's been out for several years at this point. But
if anything, that's going to make me go watch it. So yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
I think that what I really liked about that is the fact that it goes to show that had these characters gotten everything they thought they wanted, they would have never found each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really powerful kind of, there's many messages and kind of things to take away from the story we put together, but that's a great one that shows that things don't always go as planned, but you'll still end up someplace wonderful if you stick to it.
Totally. It's that classic storytelling want need thing. Right? Like I tried to gesture at it with the one line where I was like, you know, that's all you have to offer, everything I ever wanted, you know.
I really like that.
That was
line.
Great.
Thank you. But no, I thought that was a really good notion. And yeah, I think Robin, your read is right on that. It hurt, it hurt, but there was no chance we were going to say yes. Both were true.
And you know, that also, you know, I guess at the end of the day, like this is very collaborative. We have, you know, a lot of commonest people, which is how we ended up doing this together. But to the degree that I feel, you know, some amount of authorship over, you know, kind of the big ideas behind the thing, I'm glad that, you know, one of the big, you know, sort of elements in that climactic moment ended up being like alienation, you know, like if it can't offer you a world with meaningful relationships to other peers, then it can't offer you anything. You know, again, reflects the way that I experience the world in which we live, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And I mean, again, we've discussed the, you know, metaphor for capitalism and all of that. And I think especially in the end, it really came through, but like fundamentally the throne is a hyper individualist, you know, epistemological object. And that's exactly why it was never going to tempt us, but it's exactly why, like, it's also such great background about all the extant gods, because they all, one thing with the exception of Dask to some degree, the one thing they all had in common was that they were susceptible to this, you know,
and Vinti's.
And Ventis,
yeah.
Good point.
Ventis, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, and Ventis, right, was a big, like, this is an exception kind of thing.
Totally.
You know, that sort of throws the others into relief. And again, I think we're maybe getting to things that will fit better in the next regular episode. But there is a self-selection process there, right? You know, that those gods that are still around to wage war on a global level at, you know, the sort of end stages of this are the ones who found that idea most compelling. They acted
right,
on it
totally
most
the divine
readily.
Elon Musk's.
And Ventis, right, was the one who primarily flew under the radar, right? Mm-hmm. You know, right. As a way of sort of staying out of all of that.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, this sounds like good fodder for the retrospective. Yes. And I, for one, should probably wrap it up because
for sure, yeah,
we've been going for a while.
Let's
yeah
wherever yeah, you're listening to this, give a round of applause to our players. I don't have work for a while now, so I am totally unaffected by how much time we spend on this, but here are these other three people that spent like an entire half of a calendar day putting all this together, this, you know, great big finale. So my hats off to you guys. And I have
oh
had
no
a
I got to spend
time.
A day playing pretend with some of my favorite people.
Right.
Well, it rocked absolutely. Completely yeah. It rocked completely and was no sacrifice, no pain was felt.
Well,
pain was felt, but it was the consensual storytelling kind
it was
of pain.
The cathartic yeah. kind of pain,
yeah, the good kind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Well, we will wrap here. Thank you to our patrons for, supporting us through this long, strange journey and into the future. The next big campaign we play was paid for directly. The system was paid for directly by your contributions. Thank you to our non-Patreon listeners, for your participation and support. We hope you've enjoyed this little look at, what our patrons do get with each episode, but we're happy to include you in this climactic moment. And the most heartfelt thanks that I can say to my players, I'm glad that you enjoyed it and that it was no burden, but not only did we do a cool thing with this, but it has measurably and meaningfully improved my life to be doing this mm-hmm. with you all, and it has been a sublime pleasure.
I have nothing to add to that except likewise. Thank you so much,
that,
all of
yes,
you.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, really do. I'm talking to listeners. Hang on a second. I'm talking to my fellow punks here. I love you all very much. Okay, now I'm talking to you listeners again. We love you also. Thank you for being a part of this with us. Those of you who are just listening, those of you who have never stopped in on a Punks before, maybe who have like just been listening and that was that, and this is the first time you've dipped into kind of the after show. People on Patreon get one of these for every episode. So if you're interested, feel free to join us. We would love that. But also just thank you for being here. Like if you listened to every episode, that requires a lavish thank you as well. We are so yeah. happy that you did that. And we hope that you'll join us for future wonderment.
I love you guys. Like Drew said, that's also for my fellow punks. This has been a fantastic journey. Of course, I am so grateful to anyone listening. If this is your first time stumbling into a Peeps, a lot of them have similar energy.
Yes, for sure.
If not the same sort of gravity as this one, being our concluding Peeks to a 55-episode-long campaign. And because of that, anything I would have to say kind of feels significant in light of this long journey that we've all taken together. So, thanks for walking and listening along with us.
Thanks, folks, for listening. As Robin said, I nearly said, as Lissa said, this has been a long journey, and so much has been said that really there's little more to add. But thank you for listening, and be kind to one another. That's yeah. sort of the central message here.
Yeah, I love that.
Sure. Here, 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 here.
Yeah, and just really quickly, in terms of what you can get from us next, next regular episode is going to be a campaign retrospective. After that, we'll have some interstitial things. It's looking like Meat Punks is going to make a return, and we'll do some Unknown Armies, second edition as well. Then we'll be getting into Hardwired Island for some retro future cyberpunk goodness. And currently, when that campaign eventually does also wrap, I think I would like to do Flying Circus for our full campaign after that. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. Stick around.
I support that.
In the meantime, take care of yourselves and each other. We'll see you soon. Honestly,